Here we are in the studio with Richard Neal, Massachusetts 1st District, a Democrat in office since 1989. Richie, first of all, thank you, and thank you for all your service, and about to be able to vote for you again in, as my congressman. So my question to you is, what is your take on the state of the Democratic Party right now? We saw this Crowley loss over there. I'm sure he was a friend of yours. The number 4 Democrat in the House. Is there a danger that we Democrats or the people who vote Democratic are in the process of sort of turning on ourselves?
Well, I think we have to be careful as we assess the data that comes from that primary election. I think that the danger here is reading too much into it.
Yep.
And I think certainly there were demographic patterns that have been changing in that district for a considerable period of time. And I also would suggest that I think that in some measure that's a reflection of the changing nature of the Democratic Party, which is a good thing. I also would say that I think in Joe's case that good polling would have told him what was coming. The district had changed considerably, however, from the time that he began to represent what formerly was Tom Manton's old congressional district. So do I think that there's a danger here if we start to say that we're going to narrow the opportunities of the Democratic Party? Yes, I do. And remember that in about the 56 seats that are considered to be competitive across the country, those will not necessarily be Massachusetts, New York, or California Democrats that are going to win. However, the example I would use is in Virginia, where Governor Northam could not get nominated in the state of New Jersey, perhaps, or Governor Murphy in New Jersey could not have gotten nominated in the state of Virginia, but they were both able to win general elections under the banner of the Democratic Party. And I think that's a very healthy sign, in addition to which I also think that all polling indicates that there's a high level of energy going into November for members of the Democratic Party across the country. And I think we need to be careful. If you attempt to nationalize all of these races, then finding that, as we do today, that 1/3 of the Democrats in the House of Representatives come from Massachusetts, New York, and California. Wow. And I think that that's a pretty startling statistic.
Well, Richie, you mentioned polling, and you are, of course, a very bright guy, and I've always thought you were the best of the best. I have a question for you. In the Crowley district, apparently, now they did a poll 3 months out. It showed him leading comfortably with 35% margin, yet she, his opponent, wins by 15%. That's a 50% difference. What's going on?
Well, that's not unlike what happened in the Eric Cantor race with David Bratt in Virginia. So I think that when you do polling, most people would agree that you do what is known as a benchmark poll. Early on, you try to, I think, get an issue assessment. You want to figure out where you stand. You want to also come to, I think, grips with where you might be able to strengthen your position. And then you do a series of tracking polls as you get closer to election time. So what you do is you have the benchmark, and then you can find out whether or not support that you had in the previous district could have been bolstered, or you come to the conclusion that there's a trend afoot that it might be different than the one you had foreseen, but that gets you to the tracking poll. And the tracking poll probably has to take place just to make sure that things haven't changed. So I think that if you do a poll 3 months out, you don't do another poll, you're making a mistake. And the other part of it, and this is not to downplay the success of that pretty good candidate in Queens, but the turnout was pretty low. And that means that the energy level on the turnout side perhaps has much to do with the outcome as well. So I was curious because I thought at just about 9 o'clock when I was watching some of the results, I thought it was interesting that despite the fact that she had she was getting 58% of the vote, that was based at that time at about 14,000 people having voted. So I think you have to pay attention to turnout as well as demography.
Well, now, Richie, you're well known for coming around. You were recently in Pittsfield. You live in Springfield. You're always on the move. One of the things that Crowley was sort of criticized for was not getting into the district enough.
Well, I think that there are a series of challenges that a member of Congress has, and those are decisions that you have to make based on what oftentimes is the best circumstance. So, for example, I think when Joe moved his family to Washington or to the Washington area, that was perhaps to accommodate the needs of his family. And I think in other instances, I can say with great satisfaction, for example, that in the years I've been in Congress, I think I've had to spend 3 or 4 weekends in Washington, and that's it. Other than that, every weekend you come home, you visit, you get around the district, you say hello to people, you take questions, and I think that in many ways allows you to purchase some goodwill. So I think in the case of Joe Crowley, it's really hard to read too much into it, but the danger is not reading enough into it. So I think that that's a legitimate point.
Okay, I got 3 minutes I want to spend with you on the retirement of Anthony Kennedy from the Supreme Court and the new replacement. Does it scare you?
It does. And the reason for that is that I think that elections have great consequences. And, you know, Al Gore won the popular vote, and yet Justice Roberts and Justice Alito were appointed by President Bush. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, and Neil Gorsuch has been appointed by President Trump, and now there is likely to have another individual from President Trump in the next few months. And the point is that these elections do have meaningful influence well beyond the tenure of that president. I noticed that in Kennedy's case, his picture was with President Reagan when he was nominated. And for those of us of a certain age, myself included, I recall that, you know, Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal in many ways was sustained over many years by the appointment of two very important people, including at that time Justice Douglas and Justice Black. They ended up staying well beyond, almost into the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson. So you had this very important institutional memory, and I think in this instance here, Justice Kennedy was very unpredictable. He tended to side with corporations and in business cases, but he also was a zealot on the First Amendment issues. So I think that we need to be very careful here, and I think that the candidates for the Supreme Court should be fully vetted by the public, considering that lifetime tenure is not an insignificant occurrence.
So what should the Democrats be doing?
Well, I think one of the things we probably want to do is look back into the mirror on what happened over the filibuster. And I understand the frustration that everybody felt because President Obama's nominees were being held up. And I certainly think that Senator McConnell, we should all be outraged about what he did to Merrick Garland, that a president who's elected, as Obama was, even though there was 10 months to go in his tenure, if he wanted to put Merrick Garland on the court, there should have been hearings. And I think in this case now Senator McConnell is reversing the position he took then, and we would argue that this ought to take place after the midterm elections.
So what level, we got a minute, what level of activity should there be among Democrats? Should they take to the streets with
Plastic Pants? Well, I think that's part of it, I think, but at the same time calling attention to the nominee's voting record. I think it's going to be very difficult for this issue to be forced through the United States Senate without some opportunity to get some idea of what this prospective nominee would mean. I understand the role that precedent plays. I think it's established law. I think settled law ought to be an important consideration. But I also think that in the case of even Justice Kennedy, there were times when he was prepared, as they did with the recent decision over union dues, to abandon precedent.
It's always wonderful to have my congressman from Massachusetts' 1st District, Richard Neal, with us. Richie, thanks. When we come back the next time,
thank you, Alan.
We'll talk about some other stuff.